Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Fearless Training Raw Knowledge Podcast with your host, as ever, myself, Alex Connor. And look, we're into the Training Fundamentals series. So this episode, we're going to talk about progression. Last episode, we summarized adherence again in relation to training, and we talked about volume, frequency, intensity, what they were, and how they actually interact with training, and how you can use them to maximize your physique and your performance. So, as ever, if you've not listened to any of these episodes prior, I highly recommend listening to these ones in order, although they'll still make sense and you can still apply the fundamentals and the principles. It's better if you listen to them in sequence because they are in order of hierarchy and it'll just make a lot more sense and you'll get a lot more out of it. So without further ado, I'm going to keep this one as succinct as I can because we could really dive into some gritty areas, shall we say. We can get really granular with it. So first of all, progression. And this is where, with training, just like nutrition, people get things really out of order and they really focus on the things that are very specific and sometimes are a bit tunnel visioned. So progression can come in many forms, and this is the first thing that we want to understand. A lot of the time when people enter the gym, they go, we've talked about this before, they do anything, they get results, and they keep doing what they think may work, and at some point they hit a bit of a plateau, they hit a bit of a wall, or they start to regress even, go backwards. And usually it's because the technique is not where it needs to be, the understanding of how to organize your training, which we talked about last time, your frequency, your volume and intensity, and then also the progression strategies are not there, or the knowledge base isn't there. So a lot of people will just go, cool, I just need to put more weight on the bar every week. And that is not necessarily the case, and that's not necessarily going to be sustainable, especially in the long term. So when we're looking at progression, we want to think about maximizing muscle tissue for physique enhancement, but we also want to maximize, to some degree, strength. And then there becomes a point where there's going to be a little bit of a crossroads. And I talked about some recommendations last time in terms of how to prioritize that volume, whether you're looking more towards hypertrophy, fancy name for building muscle, or whether you're looking more for strength, i.e. if you were going down the route of powerlifting. However, strength and size coexist together, and the relationship is very intertwined. So a bigger muscle has a potential to be a strong muscle, and a stronger muscle has the potential to be a bigger muscle. So at the end of the day, if our goal is strength or size, then we need to pay attention to both, and they are important. It's just how we organize it and at some point prioritize it. And if you're going to keep getting bigger and stronger, you need both. Because at the end of the day, if you want to move more load, you need more horsepower, i.e. you need more muscle, contractile tissue. So we're going to talk about progression, and progressive overload is something that we should first of all address. So what is progressive overload? Progressive overload is the principle of progressively increasing your training volume, load, intensity, whilst almost overreaching, or getting to the point of what we say overreaching, which is where there's a little too much, so we can realize adaptations, whether that's strength and muscle, and then we have to usually rearrange that or back it off by using things like deloads, which is a purposeful reduction in your training. You may or may not be familiar with this. So a deload is where we would purposely reduce the training volume by a set, intensity, reps, etc., even frequency, but we're still actively training throughout that week. So therefore, the body can over-recover or recover adequately, and then we can reintroduce training over the next weeks. So if we have a training block, for example, over 4 weeks, this is just an example, we might have done a deload after a period of time. A deload can be proactive or reactive, meaning you can take a deload when you start to feel that your body's not recovering, when you feel tired, your training arousal, shall we say, is not quite there, you're not excited, you're not sleeping so well, all of these things start to happen, we want to reduce that training volume. Or you can be proactive and go, you know what, at this point, every X amount of weeks with this training load, I find that I start to dip. That's when you take a deload. The more advanced you are, the more volume you juggle, generally is the more frequently you will deload. But genetics play a big part in this as well. Some people can train for a bit longer, they can recover from a little bit more volume. So once again, there's all of these variables to consider, which we talked about in the adherence episode, right? So it's not a one size fits all. So with that in mind, we understand progressive overload, and we need to do this over time. We need to shift a certain amount of volume and weight over time. We want to accumulate more to a point. But there's only so much we can do, right? Because if we think about this logically, if people were continually adding weight to the bar, wouldn't we have humans on the planet that were lifting tens of thousands of hundreds of thousands of kilos if it was a complete linear increase in weight or in volume over time? Well, no, that's not the case, is it? Now, there are some very strong individuals out there, but it's all relative to where they started. So initially, we had this big spike. The first 12 months, again, assuming that we're training, you know, fairly intelligently, we're going to make the most gains we're ever going to make. And the problem is sometimes that leaves us with an unrealistic expectation. And we go, okay, great. I'm going to now do that same trajectory every year. So a new beginner gets in the gym. They get on a bench press, they start benching, they get to 60, 70, 80, maybe even 100 kilos in that first 12 months. And they go, oh, great. So next year I'm going to be benching 200 kilos. And unfortunately, they're usually not. Now, I'm sure there's people out there who do, but that might be a little bit specific to them. Usually what will happen is they will continue training. They'll hit a plateau. They will try to add more weight. They might regress. They might even get an injury. They could even give up. They could get dissatisfied, or they just end up kind of spinning their wheels and never really progressing. And this is where we need to understand progression strategies. So again, I'm going to go over the main progression strategies and the main elements of progression today. And I'm going to identify, I'm going to define, and I'm going to give you some key applications and takeaways as ever so you can maximize your own training. So the first one is obviously weight. When everyone thinks of progression, they think generally more weight on the bar. Now, this is obviously great in the early days, and we're going to be able to do this from session to session. As long as technique is sound and it's satisfactory and it's good, it's going to be good enough to continue to progress, because remember, strength is a skill. The more skillful you are, the more load you can move. But even just that initial adaptation of doing something, you're going to be able to do a little bit more next week generally. So again, assuming nutrition and rest is adequate, we're probably going to be able to, on the big lifts, maybe add 2.5 to 5 kilos every week. And then it might become bi-weekly, and it might even become monthly. And on the isolation exercises, that might be a little bit less. So the bigger movements, the bigger compound, multiple joint, multiple muscles, that we're going to be able to accumulate and grow more. Think about your squat variations, your deadlift variations, your big presses and pulls, etc., right? You're going to be able to progress on those a lot more. And you probably found this in your own training already, where, for example, a bicep curl, you can't exactly add that weight every week, right? It's a smaller muscle, it's a smaller movement, you sort of hit a plateau a little bit more. So depending on movements, this is going to be categorized as to what progression we actually use. So weight, again, is adding weight incrementally depending on the lift and depending on the goal. And usually in the early days, we can do that more frequently. The next one is reps, okay? So reps is something that we can easily add in, and we can start to add on those, again, usually weekly or bi-weekly, or we might do something where we change the progression and we might have 1 week we do weight and the next week that we do reps. Now, when we talk about these progressions, they come under categories of names. So I'm talking about the elements of progressions at the moment, but the actual categories of progression are things like linear progression, meaning that you're choosing one thing to progress in and it's linear. So that might just be weight every week, and that's great for a beginner. And then you might move to something called double progression. So this is where we add weight and then add reps, as we talked about. And then you've got all of these other ways that we can do it, right? So you can do things like DUP, WP, and all these acronyms stand for daily undulating periodization or weekly undulating periodization. And then you might have heard of programs like the Conduit program or Wendler 531, or people, you know, put their own spin on it. But ultimately, there's no magic programs, and you need to understand this. The fundamentals of the program and the progression strategies are what make them work. So I'm not saying they're not great, but you can't get married to one of them. It's just kind of like the nutrition principles. There's all of these different diets. There's keto, there's carnivore, there's this, there's that. But just because you got results with one of them doesn't mean that that's the way. It's the principle of the diet or the nutrition program that got you the results, i.e. usually the calorie deficit. But you don't want to adopt that. You want to use them as tools as and when you need them, based on your goals, based on what you enjoy, based on what you can adhere to. So I would start, for most of you listening, with linear and double progression before you start to go to something where you're doing weekly or daily undulating. And that can get a little bit confusing. So we'll unpack that a little bit more, but let's talk about more now the elements once again. So we talked about weight, we talked about reps. Now let's talk about sets. We could also increase set volume. And this is where you're starting to move now into that daily or weekly. So on a main lift, on your first week, you might have 3 sets of 5. On the next week, you might have 4 sets of 5. And then on the last week, you might have 5 sets of 5. All with the same weight, but you've built volume via sets. You've built that volume over time, that work capacity. And then on the fourth week, you might drop the sets back to 3 sets of 5, and then you might increase the load, so the intensity. So say you were doing 3 sets of 5 at 60 kilos, then 4 sets of 5 at 60 kilos, 5 sets of 5 at 60 kilos. You go back to 3 sets, add 5 kilos or 2.5, depending on the progression and where you're at. And then you start again with 65 kilos and you rinse and repeat. And you can get a lot out of that in the early days. And again, that is just an example. So again, you don't have to use that one specifically, but that is something that's going to be more inclined or advantageous of a bigger lift. Like again, a squat, a bench, or a deadlift. You wouldn't want to do that on a bicep curl. Why? Again, isolation versus compound. We can talk about fiber types as well. But again, I don't want to get too down the rabbit hole. If you think about doing a bicep curl, doing 5 reps is probably not advantageous. It's probably going to cause a lot of fatigue and a high risk of injury. So that's where on isolation movements we'll choose more higher reps. Anywho, form, another form of progression. Now, these forms that I'm going to talk about now of progression are going to be a little less mainstream, shall we say, or a little less elucidating for most people. They're not aware of them. So your form is a really big one, especially when you're starting off. If you can improve your form, if you can improve the mind-muscle connection, i.e. actually feel it in the muscle, you can connect the way you get into position on lift, the tightness, the way you set up, you know, these little things that you might be learning from a coach, or again, if you've got, you know, some good resources and coaches that you follow that can help you, shout out. If you want to check that, you can go to my Instagram channel where I upload these videos every week and help you improve your form and avoid the biggest mistakes on all the lifts. You can apply that and you might go, oh, you know what, I feel that better now. And you know, because I feel it better, all of a sudden this lift is now easier. Because when you're doing things more skillfully, they usually get easier, and then you can add more weight, and then of course they get more challenging. So form is a really big one, and it's very underrated. Again, I always talk about skill acquisition. I always talk about technique. It's the elephant. It's the elephant in the room that everyone really ignores. And I don't want to put it on a pedestal, but it's a large reason why most people don't look the way they want to look. And I use this example all the time. You know, go into a gym, how many people look like they actually lift? You know, everyone's doing the same exercises to a degree, all the equipment's there for everyone to use, but there's usually only a smaller percentile of people that really look, you know, great. And look, that is sometimes part to genetics, but let's assume that it isn't, because we can't control it. Now, what's the difference, right? Let's not even talk about nutrition and rest. Well, it's the way they lift the weights, right? It's the intensity. Are they working close enough to failure? Are they working with enough volume? Are they actually using correct technique that initially will manipulate or damage or cause adaptation for growth in the muscles? And oftentimes the case is no. And this is why we see people train for years and they get this initial bit of change and then they just look the same for 20 or 30 years. But they go, I've been doing this for years. Everyone else is on gear. That's why they're big. Not the case. So form is really, really big. The next one is we've got rest time as well. We can actually reduce our rest time. Now, again, there's a limiting factor to this. If we reduce our rest time so much, we actually limit and inhibit our a capacity to lift. So on bigger lifts, this is where we might be getting up to that 2-3-4 minute rest time. For most people, they're not going to need to do that straight away because we're working on skill. We're not going to be working with a large intensity, i.e. weight on the bar, but we may increase that over time. And we may then go, okay, cool, could I get through more volume or this total session in slightly less time with still good form and the same weights? So again, a little bit more rarer, you know, progression strategy, but still a valid one. And again, depending on your goals, could be very valid for you, especially if you've got time limits or you're only able to get in the gym a couple of times a week. Again, you don't want to rush your lifts. The bigger lifts need more rest. The smaller lifts, again, you can have, you know, a little less time because the recovery there is faster. So on your big lifts, again, we talk about that 2-4 minute mark, compound lifts. And then as you get to the latter end of your workouts, you know, it might be sort of towards that minute, minute and a half, 2 minutes mark. The next one is intensity techniques. So intensity techniques are things like supersets, drop sets, partial reps, all of these, you know, things that you may hear or you may see in certain programs, and sometimes they're sort of littered throughout them or sprinkled throughout them, and sometimes a little bit overdone as well. I'm not a huge fan of overusing these techniques, but they are great tools. But I think a lot of people use them like a hammer. They get it and they just like nail everything and they try to do supersets on everything. We've got to understand that we want to use these as a tool. So this is great also if you've got a time limit or you are very sparse on time, you might need to superset. And the way we superset is generally when we're actually supersetting a muscle group and then we're doing another exercise straight after it, which is training the same muscle group. So we're supersetting. However, There's another way, which I'm more of a fan of, which is an agonist and antagonist paired set, which is like a superset of the opposite muscle groups. So for example, think about doing a bicep curl and then going into, say, a tricep, or the other way around. You do a tricep exercise and then a bicep exercise. So while one muscle is working, the other's resting, and then vice versa. So that's a very efficient way to train two muscle groups in a faster, shorter period of time, and then you may have a rest period, and get through just as much volume without sacrificing any form. Again, drop sets. If you were low on time, you might go, cool, I don't have the time to do 5, 4, whatever it is sets. So you might do 1 or 2 good sets, or even 1, and just drop sets. So every time you finish or you get close to a failure, you drop the weight and you go again, you drop the weight, you go again, you drop the weight and you go again. Now, I'm not going to go through all of these techniques, but again, these are part of progression. So you may add these in as you get more advanced, or as you get further into your block, you might add these intensity progressions in. Even AMRAP, so as many reps as possible. But I'd save that for more the isolation exercises. These intensity techniques are usually better whether you're doing, depending on the split of your day, if you're doing compound movements, you probably want to do it on your main lifts to a degree. You could do it on compound, but you'd want to do sort of like back and chest, you know, shoulders and triceps, things like that, back and arms. But on your big, big lifts, you could possibly sacrifice a little bit of fatigue as well, so or volume. So you might want to keep, like, say, your big, big lifts, like your squat, your bench, your deadlifts, things like that. You want to keep those on their own where possible. But again, feel free to use these techniques as and where you can. But again, they're just one of many tools that you can use. The last one I want to talk about is recovery time as well. So how does that work? Well, recovery in terms of progression can be a good gauge on how you're progressing. So say, for example, you were only manipulating 1 or 2 variables, and that was maybe a little bit of weight and a few reps. And your progression over time, or sorry, your recovery over time was getting better to the point where you're like, okay, like I'm less sore. And I'm able to recover faster, or maybe as you're gradually increasing that volume, your recovery is still adequate. So that could be a sign that you're able to recover faster, you're able to tolerate more volume. And recovery is really underrated because a lot of people don't overtrain, they underrecover. They're not getting enough sleep, the nutrition's inadequate, the hydration's inadequate, they're not replenishing the body, even massage, stretching, basic things like that you can do, housekeeping to keep the body mobile. So these are little markers as well that you can use as progressions. And another thing to note while we're on the topic of muscle soreness, so we've got an acronym called DOMS, Delayed Onset of Muscle Soreness, right? In the early days, you're going to be more sore. When you start something, again, if you went out tomorrow and we all just went snowboarding, we'd be really sore if we'd not done it for a while, if we'd never done it at all. But over time, if we kept doing it, our soreness would reduce and we'd be able to tolerate more and more time on the snow. And it's the same with weight training. Your body adapts over time and it can handle more and more and more. But obviously to a point, and then you have to back off, you have to rearrange things and then go again. It's almost like filling up a bottle, and that's fatigue, and it's filling up, filling up, filling up. And then as you get to overflow a little bit, then you got to pull it back down again. Hence the deloads, or the reduction, or the reorganization of volume, frequency, and intensity. And again, we do this via reps, sets, all of those things, and the elements we talked about last time. Because again, all of these elements now fall into the latter element that we talked about, volume, frequency, intensity. So know that you're not always going to be as sore as you were in the early days, and soreness is not a direct correlation of the success of the workout. A lot of people think that, oh, if I'm not sore, I've not done a good job. Not necessarily the case. You will adapt. So when you do things repetitively, you'll be less sore because your body is more adapted to do them. When you change an exercise, you might find that that soreness spikes up again. Oh, why is that? Well, it's a variation of change. You might say, well, I'm still using this muscle group. I've gone from using my quads, my glutes, my hamstrings on this squat variation to doing the same muscle groups on this squat variation. And it might be even the difference between doing a barbell squat and a Smith machine squat, and you'll just be, you know, you'll still be sore. And you'll be like, well, how's that? Because it was almost the same movement pattern. The little variances in terms of how mechanical tension is loaded on the body make a huge difference. And that's enough of a stimulus to get sore. And this is why we do want to change exercises every so often, but not super frequently. And we're going to talk about that next time. Because if we don't, we might find that we stagnate. But if we change them too often, we're not really giving ourselves time to progress with that movement pattern and actually progressively overload it. So again, we're not trying to chase soreness, and we're not trying to confuse the muscles, air quotes, for people listening, all the time, because we don't give ourselves the opportunity to learn, grow, and get the most out of those movements. So to recap, we talked about progression. We talked about the categories of progression, double, linear, okay, DUP, WP, all of these different types, like weekly undulating periodization. in progression and daily and all of this, right? But again, they are tools. For most of you listening, start with the basics. Start with linear and double. And then we talked about the types. We talked about weights. We talked about reps, sets, form, rest time, intensity techniques, and recovery. And again, this is a small deep dive. This is not a super right down into the nitty gritty, right? I want to give you an overview, and most of you just need the basics. Most of you will just utilize those. And even in the latter stages, never neglect the basics as ever, because they will take you the rest of the way. Training is not as complicated as you think, and it doesn't need to be, and this is exactly why I'm doing these series. So if this is something that you want to learn and understand, and you want a hand, you want me to help you with this, then click the links in my bio. You can apply for coaching. We can have an honest conversation about what it's going to take, and if it's a good fit, we can get you started with something. Aside from that, guys, we're going to talk about exercise selection next week. And this is the one that most people think of when they think of the training elements. These are the exciting things. But again, it's not quite there yet. You can see how these latter principles or these earlier principles are much more important, the overarching themes. We're doing the broad strokes of the painting, if you will. And then we're going to start to fill in the details now and the importance of it, just like we did with nutrition. So if you like this episode, give it a like. Please share it. Big one for me is, can you please leave a rating and a review? I've realized that I've not really asked many people to do this, and there's a lot of people that listen and tune in and enjoy it. So it would really help me out if you could take 1 minute, scroll to the bottom of wherever you're listening to, leave me a rating and a review. If you're not sure, DM me, I'll show you how. And look, that helps the channel grow, and it helps us help more people like you. So thanks for tuning in, guys. And of course, until the next episode, Lions, stay fearless.
For those of you who are confused, frustrated, and sick and tired of not seeing the results that you want or deserve, make sure that you click the Apply for Coaching button in the description below and line up a completely free consultation with myself, where we can discover if it's a good fit as client and coach and take your health and physique to the next level once and for all.